Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the GM Shuffle.
Everybody's open for business. Like, who isn't open for business? Who's closed this week? Everybody's open for business. Mike Brown might not trade with you, but he's open for business.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Draft week is here, Michael, 3 days away from the first round Thursday night of the NFL draft in Detroit. And we sit here wondering what's going to happen at the top of the draft, still with 3 days to go. Nobody knows, outside of maybe a handful of people over at Commander's Park, whatever else they'll call that location these days. But how we doing? How we feeling today? Are you feeling confident in anything outside
good.
Of Caleb Williams?
Yeah. We feel good. I mean, you know, I watched the Sixers the other night. We feel good. I had Big Daddy texting me. You know, it's amazing how Big Daddy can transition from football expertise into a basketball expertise.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. You know, I've never seen anything like it. I thought Will Hill was like the most incredible one, but Big Daddy might have taken him. You know, he's telling me about what's wrong with the 76ers and how they should get fixed and what's wrong with his Knicks, because he's still not happy with the Knicks. How he became a Knick fan, I don't know. But, you know, I watched that, and all I kept thinking about watching the 76ers play is Josh Harris's statement in the Seth Wickersham column about how he wanted to model the Commanders after the 76ers. You know, I'm just going to let these Commander fans in on a secret. You don't want to be the 76ers. Like, you don't want to live this agony. You do not. Let me just tell you that. You don't want to live this. So, yeah, but I think the point here, to get back to reality, is that the league is putting a lot of pressure on the teams in the top five to not let picks out, to spoil the moment, you know, because they're in Detroit. I hear it's going to be cold in Detroit. You know, they want that enthusiasm. They want the reactions on television of people and the surprises and the looks in the face. So they are really, really working hard to assure that these teams don't let things out. So, and I think teams are adhering to it as well.
That's interesting, because like, the draft is one of the great television shows that we have every single year. Like, the drama of it, once you get past the picks that are known, is really fun to go ahead and take in as a fan. But that's interesting that the league is doing that, because I think last year was also pretty similar. Like, we didn't really find out until, what, 20, 30 minutes before we were going to do our draft night show that Stroud was going to the Texans. Like, the whole time we thought it was Anderson at two, but then we saw how they went ahead and took Stroud at two, then they moved up to three to go ahead and take Will Anderson. So they ended up getting both of their guys. But it's interesting, like, outside of the number one overall pick, similar to last year when all we knew was Bryce Young going to Carolina, that feels like the case here this year in the NFL draft. Is all we know is Caleb Williams going to Chicago. Outside of that, it could go in any other direction. It could be May. It could be Daniels. Maybe it could be McCarthy. I saw his odds move for number two overall a little bit over the weekend. Not much, but a little bit. We're all making speculative guesses here and educated guesses, but they are guesses, which is, I guess, like you said, what the league wants.
And that's what they want. And then I think the other mistake we make when we're doing this is we basically get into this, you know, we get into this, Washington is picking two. They need this. Arizona's picking four. They need that. And then everybody in their mocks just put a need into the team, right? They just put a need in, when in reality, like, if you're Jim Harbaugh and you've just taken over the Los Angeles Chargers and you have a huge contract, you've got at least 5 years to fix the problems, you're not going to get fired, you're really not interested in filling one specific need. You're interested in filling building the right team. And therefore, that could be, you know, you may pass on the receiver and take an offensive lineman, which he echoed that sentiment. And I think we get so focused on filling the needs when you have this leash, when you have this rope as one of these teams that are picking early in the draft, to kind of extend yourself and to fill the overall team structure and to build the team correctly. And that doesn't get into the conversation at all. And so I think that's the other area. And then I think you got certain teams that have told you what they want to do, but nobody seems to want to pay attention to it, right? Like, we know that the Patriots don't have, other than Jacoby Brissett, that's the only quarterback they have on their team. Mm-hmm. Other than Jarrett Stidham, the Denver Broncos have no other quarterback on their team. Like, they're telling us that they are going to pick quarterbacks. Now, here's where I think there's a little bit of a difference. And George Payton, the general manager of the Denver Broncos, says this draft has 7 or 8 starting quarterbacks. You know, I'm going to keep that quote. I hate to be picking on George all the time, but that's such a far-fetched quote. It's ridiculous. Most people believe that once you get into the second element of these quarterbacks, I mean, Spencer Rattler's undersized. He's not a great athlete. Like, you're not winning Super Bowls or winning anything with, he could be a backup, but that's not where that's going. So if you don't get one early, if you don't get one of these six, and even if you get one of these six, there's no guarantee. So I think that's why this puts more pressure on these teams that are absolutely have to have one to get one.
Maybe George is auditioning for a job in media based on how things have gone for the Denver Broncos with that take.
I mean, like the last person, I mean, all due respect, you know, you blew it with Russell. Like, I'm going to take your quarterback evaluations a little bit less, right? Like, I mean, I'm sure you probably can, but you know, the job you had in Denver was pick the head coach and get the quarterback, and you failed miserably at both of those. So like, and you had all the authority, so you could say, well, Lombardi, you suck at that too. Well, I never had a job that had all the authority that he had or that Tannenbaum had at the Jets or any of those. Those jobs, you get one of those, it's really hard. Even you may have the title of GM, but you don't have all that authority.
It's the inner workings of the National Football League and the power dynamics of all these organizations. Well, let's get into this week here, because we have dubbed this lying season, but now this is like the ultimate lying week. And we've heard from most general managers with their pre-draft media availability. Last time they'll talk to the media before they start picking players on Thursday. And from an overall standpoint, are general managers, are they telling the truth? I would imagine that most often than not, they're omitting the truth. They're not outwardly lying just because, like, what's the point of that? But they're not going to give us everything. But can we take anything away from some of these comments that they're making to at least give us a clearer picture of what to expect Thursday night?
Well, like when Elliot Wolf says he's open for business, I mean, that's like, when aren't they open for business? Who's closed for business, right? You know, like that, and that becomes the tagline. That becomes the media. The Patriots are open for business. Everybody's open for business. Like, I was watching the Open the other day. I was watching the Masters, and Bill and I are sitting on the couch, and Dottie Pepper says, "Well, he's got a 7-iron in his hands." Hey, Dottie, where would that 7-iron be if it wasn't in his fucking hands? Like, seriously, like, he has a 7-iron. It doesn't necessarily have to be in his. It's always in his hands. Like, everybody's open for business. Like, who isn't open for business? Who's closed this week? Like, I mean, who's giving people, who's closed? And that becomes a story. Oh, my God, they're open for business. Everybody's open for business. Mike Brown might not trade with you, but he's open for business.
Yeah, phone's off. I'm actually not taking any calls anymore.
Taking calls today. Hold my calls. Hold all my calls. I don't want to talk to anybody. Like, seriously, do you understand? You're always open for, I mean, if you're not, it's like, how ridiculous was it when Ryan Pace said that he turned down other offers and he wanted to just do the right thing and put Justin Fields at a plate? Like, how's, like, and people buy this bullshit. Like, you should be fired if that's the case. Your job is to make sure the team gets the most value. It's your job to be open for business. Like, that, it's like a carpenter showing up to work without his fucking hammer. Like, seriously, it's part of the job.
Yeah, it's like, what did you expect to do today? Like, we're just going to hang out and just chat, I guess. But Elliot Wolf, open for business, New England Patriots sitting at pick 3.
That becomes a headline. Of course he's open for business, but look at his depth chart. If he doesn't pick a quarterback at 3, maybe he goes to 6 and thinks he can get JJ. I don't know. I'm not saying he's not going to trade down. I'm just saying, of course he's going to listen. And that's where the chart comes into play, right? Because, you know, everybody wants the Raiders to trade up. And look, the Raiders are trying their hardest to I don't know if it's Telesco or if it's just within their, but they're trying to maneuver this Jaden Daniels thing in their favor. They definitely are. There's no question about it, right? They're manipulating the agent and all that. They're trying. Is it going to work? I doubt it, because you got to go from 13 up to 3. That's a lot of points you're going to have to give up. You're going to have to overpay, because you got Minnesota sitting at 11. You got Denver sitting at 12. They would go up if they could. And look, we know this about Sean Payton. He has no problem trading away next year's draft. No problem at all. Because he feels like I'll always get it again.
So you just
have to kind of take a step back and say, don't believe anything, please.
It's interesting that you bring up that Raiders thing, because obviously there's a connection of Antonio Pierce. He was at Arizona State when Jaden Daniels was coming out of high school. He ends up committing to Arizona State, played there before he went to LSU and transferred to the Tigers. I guess if Jaden Daniels is there at 3, let's say the Commanders go ahead and pass on Daniels. They take Drake May or J.J. McCarthy. Does that deter teams like Minnesota from moving up? Because all the reports are Minnesota has liked May and McCarthy. I haven't really heard much about them liking Daniels. I know they brought him in for a visit last week, but I haven't heard much of Daniels to Minnesota. Maybe that's because everyone's assumed that he's going to go to Washington. But if he's there at 3, do you think those teams like Denver or even Minnesota would be interested in moving up that far? Or would it just be the Raiders who would then get to say, all right, let's give up a couple first-round picks or however much it costs, the 1,000 points, and get there? Like, would there be much competition to move up for number 3 for Jaden Daniels?
Well, the problem is, if you're Elliott Wolf and you get Daniels sitting at 3, why wouldn't you just turn the card in? You need a quarterback more than those teams. It's not your job to help Minnesota. It's not your job to help Denver. Turn the card in. And I think the one thing we could take from all this nonsense that's been going on is when Horitz, the GM, the new GM of the Chargers, what he said is true. He said, look, we're picking 5, you know, and it's going to take a lot for us to move down, which is probably the right thing to say. 5, the value of 5 is technically 1,700 points in the old chart, right? Mm-hmm. And the first pick overall is worth 3,000. Well, in this draft, okay, this is me, not the public perception. It's to get a blue chip, a guy who you say in your grading system will be a top 5 player at his position, that's 3,000 points. Like, you can't trade away from that. You know, see, this is where we get in such a gray area, and we'll talk about it when we come back from the block, is everybody thinks the first rounders are all on the same level, right? Mm-hmm. Drake London is a great receiver. He's a first rounder. But what's the difference between Drake London and the kid the Packers picked, Watson, in the second round? Who's a better player?
Yeah. London's healthier. He plays more games. But when Watson plays, he is explosive as they get in the National Football League. I'm sure Big Daddy, he has his gripes with Christian Watson in the Green Bay
Packers. We'll see.
We'll see if he can stay healthy. We'll be back on the other side. We're going to take a quick break. This is the GM Shuffle. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds, and so much more. As the first round continues on, you can bet sides, totals, player props, everything at your disposal over on DraftKings. All you have to do, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHUFFLE. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. big offseason for Big Blue, and general manager Joe Shane of the New York Giants spoke with the media and said that there's no pressure to take a quarterback in this year's draft. Despite all the work that they've done, they've done work with McCarthy and some of these other guys at the top of the draft. They also brought in Russell Wilson. Who could forget the pictures of Newark Airport? Russell Wilson had that visit with the New York Giants. But Joe Shane had this to say about his quarterback room, quote, "With Drew Locke's experience, he started games and played, and Daniel Jones' experience, and what Tommy did last year and another year in the system, Tommy has come a long way. I think we can go into the season with the three that we have, and I'd be comfortable with that." Those are the words of Joe Shane, the general manager of the New York Giants, who, hey, they've done all this work, but they're comfortable with their guys.
Then why would they do all the work? Why, they didn't do all the work. See, nobody asked them, why didn't you do the work last year on all the quarterbacks? Like, where were you last year? Why didn't you do all the work last year? Why are you doing all the work this year? Like, you're really going to go in with Tommy DeVito. I mean, you're really going to do that? I mean, you know, it was funny. I was at almost a Tommy DeVito store the other day. Berman and I, we go out to see this. We're on a mission on Saturday afternoon. Nice little mission. And, you know, and then we said, let's go stop. There's a sandwich place over in Linwood where I live. And this guy, Daniel, who follows the show, loves the show, loves you, Femi.
Shout out, Daniel.
You know, told me, you got to go to this place. You got to go to this place, Chico and Sons. It's in Northfield. And it's a Sopranos theme sandwich place, right? And they got the big pussy. They got all the sandwiches are named after the characters, and they're good. It's really good. So I go in there. Millie and I went one time, and then Berm and I went there the next time. And so I'm in there, and Daniel actually walks in. Like, how ironic is that, right? Yeah. Is it, you know, it's unbelievable. And so, like, and I'm thinking, like, This is Tommy DeVito's world. Like, his picture should be up here. But he's not somebody I'm sitting in my office, and neither is Shane, saying, oh, he's going to be, you know, I feel comfortable we got him on the roster. I mean, come on. Please, do you have to insult my intelligence? I mean, the way you manage the game with him in there. See, that's the thing I think people don't understand either, is when you're watching tape. Okay, let's take this for an example. Everybody says, right, everybody will say, and this is an important part of scouting, and this is why Al Davis would always say, you better understand schemes and players. You better know plays and players, okay? So you watch Tommy DeVito. You know they're telling you when you're watching him on tape that he's very limited, and they're trying to do everything for him not to lose the game, okay? So let's take it into the draft, Femi. All right, you got Arnold, the corner from Alabama, and Kool-Aid McKinley, okay? When you put their tape on, you put Alabama's tape on, you see Nick Saban, who plays historically 90% man coverage. That's all he wants to play. And you watch their tape, and they're playing more zone than they've ever played before. In deductive reasoning, you're saying to yourself, Nick doesn't think he can play man-to-man. Nick doesn't think those players could play man-to-man, right? And so, but yet, he's got two corners in the graded into the first round, when he's already told you, based on his tape, they can't play man-to-man. It's like when Peppers came out, the safety, and they had him in the box and they blitzed him all the time. They were telling you he couldn't play in the deep third of the field. They tell you, the tape tells you more than you can tell by your brilliance in scouting, right? Like, they're not hindering the player. And so that's the point about when you watch Locke play, when you watch Daniel Jones play, when you watch DeVito play, they have to limit what they do because they're keeping the player away. And so that's where you can't lie about. I mean, you can lie to the media because they'll never question you on it because they have no idea. But you can't lie to people in the league that know that. Like, they're working on the quarterbacks because they know they need a quarterback. Now, does that mean they're going to draft one? I don't know. I think they like Drake May. Will he make it to them? I don't know. Would they take McCarthy? I don't know. But to me, they're working on it for a reason, because they've already shown you on their tape that they can't. That's why it's so important when you watch the tape to understand what the player is asked to do and what his strengths are as it relates to what you want him to do. Could I see a team who plays a lot of zone taking Arnold, or a team that plays a lot of zone taking Kool-Aid? Sure. Could I see a team that plays not, like, if you're Philadelphia and you're, and I don't know this for a fact, but if you're Philadelphia and you got Vic Fangio over there, you know, you're either taking Mitchell or Wiggins from Clemson. That's it. Those are the only two corners you're going to take.
Yeah, no, it's got to fit with the scheme. It can't just be, oh, here's my number one rated player, then we just put him with this team that needs a corner, because even within the positions, there's certain scheme fits that guys can play well in zone, guys can play well in man, and vice versa there. General manager Joe Shane, he did say, though, that he is confident in Daniel Jones and kind of rejected the premise of what Rich Eisen said about the Giants having buyer's remorse for the contract that they gave Daniel Jones last year. So they can say one thing, but the actions, like you mentioned, say another thing with all the work that they've done at quarterback. Let's talk about some of the work that's being done right now in the room, because you've been in the room. Not many people who speak on football in the media have been in the room, so we're all just kind of just making educated guesses, essentially. What's going on right now, specifically as it pertains to trades? Because this is a draft that I think a lot of people feel like we're going to see a lot of trades, especially for these quarterbacks in the top 10. Do you see teams maybe have some trades already kind of sort of hammered out in principle, and then they wait to make those trades on draft night? Or how does the trades come to be once we actually get to draft night? Is it all done on the clock? How does this kind of all work out?
No, well, there's a preliminary discussion. You know, you are the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals. You're Monty. Mm-hmm. And I'm at Minnesota, and I call you up. Monty, you looking to move? Yeah, we move for the right price. Okay. When do you want to talk about it? Well, it's probably going to come down to it would either come down to draft day, or if you want to make an offer, we'll certainly think about it today, but it's going to have to be significant. Okay, now, so that's it. But they're not locking themselves into anything. There's always going to be a little bit of wiggle room, and you really don't have any way of getting a deal done as this close unless the team is willing to just go anywhere. Like what Horowitz said, you know, it's going to have to blow us away. Well, he's not moving because he can't move because he doesn't know what he's moving away from, right? Mm-hmm. What he's moving away from. What's Monty moving away from 4 if he goes to 11? He kind of has a sense, if I go to 11, here's what I'm going to get. I might do that. You could do that. But if you're Elliott can't move until he knows what he's moving away from. So you can't really make a deal. You make a call, it's an interest call. And then you put it up on the whiteboard and you say, okay, this is a team that they're willing to move. Okay, we'll call them the morning of the draft to make sure. And you're working your way through the scenarios. And then they have to value what they feel. Like, you know, everybody wants to use the chart, but when you're picking in the top 5 or the top 8 and it's a supply and demand issue, then that chart really goes out the window, right? The chart goes completely out the window. And I think in this draft, is you have to be really careful, because going back to the Drake London Watson conversation, what I think most teams, me included, where you make the biggest mistake is just because they're new doesn't mean they're better than someone else. And so, like, you know, when you pick Drake London in the first round or you pick some other guys, you know, are they really better than the guy in the third round? How much better are they? How much better are they? And I think, to me, that's where you get into a lot of problems. And everybody thinks they're significantly better, but then when you watch them on tape, how much better are they really? Can they change the trajectory of the game? And that's where it gets a little bit complicated. And I think you got to be really careful in that area.
So I want to go back to, I want to go back to the trade discussion here, just because last year we saw that Houston Texans, Arizona Cardinals trade. Texans take Stroud at 2, and then they move right up to number 3. Like, was all of that was hammered out just like while they were on the clock, while Arizona was on the clock to get moved back, and Arizona eventually moves back up into the top 10 to take the offensive tackle. But initially, when they traded down with Houston, because Houston had those 2 picks, that was just done during, like, there was maybe a preliminary discussion, but nothing in terms of the terms of the deal that were hammered out prior to Arizona being on the clock. Is that correct?
Right. And look, Nick and Monty are good friends, so they've been in constant conversation, you know, and I'm sure Monty told Nick, hey, Nick, the only way I'm doing this is if you blow me away. And so then Nick comes back and puts together a package, you know, and then he comes back and puts together, and then Monty sits there and says, okay, if we go here, we can move up. And then we can move up to get to here. And really, this ends up going. And I think in this draft, because there are so few of really first round. I mean, what's the prop we have in the draft, right? There's only supposed to be like 12, like maybe 11 defensive players picked in this draft in the first round.
10.5 over at DraftKings.
And so 10.5, if you get to 11. Now, on most boards, I think there's just really 12 first-rounders. And Latua, who's probably would easily be the first defensive player off the board, but he's got the fusion neck. Like everybody has Dallas Turner as the clear number one. I think Brian Murphy's by far the clear number one defensive player on the board. And then I think it's Mitchell. Right? And then I think it's Mitchell. But then you got Verse from Florida State. But then now you're starting to get into the second level down there where you've got, you know, the kid from Illinois, the Robinson kid from Missouri. Oh, yeah. Then you got the Penn State Robinson. Are you really getting a player that is described in a first round venue, right? That he can come in and be in the top 10 players at this position? You're really not. So I think what happens there now, it becomes a need thing, and that's when trades become initiated. See, like, I think Philadelphia has got to be looking at this corner board at 22 saying, we got to get one of these man-to-man corners. Like, we got to get one. Because if we don't get one now, we're probably not. So I would think their focus is on Mitchell. Their focus is on Wiggins, assuming they like those. If their focus is on the two Alabama kids, I think if they call Nick, why didn't you play anymore? Why were you playing so less zone than you've ever played in your career? He's not going to answer it correctly, but he's answered it with the tape.
Yeah. It's like regardless of whatever he says, his actions, they speak much louder than what they actually ran out there. Philadelphia right now, their cornerback depth chart, James Bradbury and Darius Slay, a couple of guys who, when you watched them play last year, looked a little bit longer in the tooth, especially with the way they were playing on the back end at the second half of the season. Corner could definitely be a position of need for the Eagles, and Howie Roseman is not afraid to trade. You know, we know Howie's always willing to make some moves there. So if they feel like there's a guy that they covet, if it's Kenyon Mitchell, if that's a guy, or if it's Wiggins out of Clemson, maybe they go ahead and ultimately make those moves. DraftKings does have an interesting prop that we can talk about on Wednesday during our draft preview. 6.5 trades Thursday night. I think that's an interesting one to chew on over these next couple of days. It all depends on who's there, when these teams are actually on the clock. But 6.5 trades in a market and a draft that a lot of people expect trades with these quarterbacks being the big headliners at the top of the board. All right, we'll continue on the other side. But for our DraftKings Network audience, we'll see you guys on Wednesday. Podcast audience, don't go away. We'll be back after this quick break. We're going to keep it rolling here on the GM Shuffle. You know, it's interesting this time of the year, once we get to draft week, we start to hear some nuggets that we have not heard at any point throughout the draft process. And I think one that's really interesting from Adam Schefter's mailbag over at ESPN, he put out some buzz, some intel of draft notes that he's been hearing, and he wrote up about it. And I think one that's really an eyebrow raiser is Washington quarterback Michael Penix could go potentially as high as 8th overall to the Atlanta Falcons. There seems to be a connection with Penix and the Atlanta Falcons brass. Falcons fans have talked about how they've visited with Michael Penix and how the team seems to have some sort of interest there. Some might think maybe in the second round. Schefter saying it could go as high as number 8 overall come Thursday night, though, which I think would be a stunner for a lot of folks watching Thursday night.
Yeah, and I mean, Super Bowl champion GM Terry Fontenot, I mean, he's made it clear that, you know, that they're not done at quarterback, right? I mean, you know, you don't pack all those wins, and I'm sure Kaiser Sose McKay, he's checked them all out too. So, and God knows you want Ryan Pace in that room when you're picking quarterbacks with his track record. I mean, who wouldn't? I think to me, you know, nothing would surprise me. Like, nothing would surprise me at all when it comes to Atlanta. Somebody said they could take a wide receiver. If they take a receiver, they should all go home. They should all just go home. Seriously. Like, what they should do is take the three technique Murphy and call and be really happy with that. Mm-hmm. And they could. They could easily do that. However, it would not say to me, don't take the quarterback, because you have Cousins for 2 years, 3 years on a really rich deal, and it gives you time to do the Jordan Love thing. Now, it's expensive to use the 8th pick overall for the Jordan Love, but I think Atlanta thinks they're really a good team. I think they think they're really a good team. I think they feel like they were just a quarterback away. And so they feel like they're picking in the 20s in terms of their mentality of their team as it relates to their ability. They think once Cousins walks on the field, those 7 wins that the Super Bowl champion executive has been able to deliver every year will turn into 12, right? And so that's their mindset. As for the Rams, I've been saying this since the offseason. I mean, you know, and I don't know the connection. I mean, Adam put in there the connection between Les Snead and Bo Nix's dad, Pat. But, you know, Les Snead was hugely responsible for drafting Stetson Bennett and overlooked all the issues off the field that went along with Bennett that ended up creeping up when he went to the Rams. And so they can't count on that. And I think when Stafford being where he is with no more guaranteed money left in his contract, and you see the invigoration of Sean McVay, he's going to have to get a quarterback. And why not take one? Why not take one if you get one now? Well, you got Stafford, you know, because look, here's the reality. If they lose Stafford, they're going to be in tough spot. I think the best time to take one when no one thinks you're going to take one.
Yep.
And if you visualize and when when Sean McVay takes one, he'll develop them. Just like whoever Sean Payton takes, you cannot like him. And this one GM said that Penix and Nix aren't first rounders. I'm not sure there's a lot of guys in this draft that are first rounders. So I don't disagree with that line of thinking. But who takes them is going to really matter more than anything.
Yeah, and I'm obviously not making this comparison for the player, but it's sort of similar, like you want to take one on your own schedule, not on the schedule of, like, we have to get one of these guys. But it's when Kansas City drafted Patrick Mahomes. They moved up in the draft to get Mahomes when they had Alex Smith on a team that won the division. Like, they had been a perennial playoff team, but they thought that they could hit another ceiling with Mahomes, and boy, were they right. They've won 3 Super Bowls since then. You said you want to take a guy when it's least expected or when it's on your own terms and not when it's, hey, we have a big glaring need at quarterback. We just got to take one of the guys we think is good in this class, because that's how you run into trouble. And some of these quarterbacks and teams have kind of cycled through a lot of these guys. I think that's the interesting part, though, that you mentioned what the general manager said. Schefter reported about this in his Intel mailbag, is that Penix and Nix day 2 picks, but some teams disagree that they might go as high for Penix at 8th overall. Is there a chance that we end up seeing, like, we've talked about this before, but do we see 6 guys go on Thursday where Nix and Penix could potentially go on Thursday night, just given the fact that some teams might see them as really good fits for what they want to do, maybe not for what the league thinks, but for what they want to do? In this instance, it could be Nix with the Rams,
yeah,
and it could be Penix with the Falcons.
I mean, it could be, right? I mean, this isn't like as ridiculous as saying Malik Willis is going to go in the first when he really didn't run. I mean, Penix played in a lot of big games, played in a national championship game. He throws the ball in the third level. There's a lot to like about him. You wish he could stay healthy. You're worried about his knees. He doesn't play to the speed that he's timed in. You know, Nix to me is a guy, and I don't disagree with the GM. Look, I'd say the same thing about McCarthy. I don't see McCarthy. Do you think J.J. McCarthy is going to be in the top 10 players at his position in the NFL? I don't see it, right? Do I think Drake May is going to be in the top 10 of his positions? I don't see that either. So if you don't see that, you can't. They're not really first rounders. But this quarterback moment is deeper than anything in terms of they get inflated, which I'm not arguing with either. So I think to me that's kind of where I am. I mean, I think a lot of it goes to who's taking the player, who's taking him. If Sean look, here's the other thing about Sean. You got to understand. Like, Sean would still be in New Orleans today. He'd still be coaching in New Orleans if he was able to pull off the trade for Mahomes. He wanted Mahomes, and Kansas City beat him for it. It's one of those moments in sports where, you know, you don't see the defining moment. Like when Al Davis thought he had John Elway and John Beek and the Denver Broncos were able to come in and swoop the deal using elements of the deal he crafted. Right? Like, those are defining moments in sports that affect franchises forever. And I don't think Sean's going to, if he feels like he's in love with a player, I don't think he gives one rat's ass about what some other GM thinks or what Mel thinks or what, you know, what anyone, me, Michael Lombardi, none of us. He's just going to pick the guy and put him in the system and let him work it, because he's going to want somebody to do what he tells him to do. His problem with Russell Wilson was he could not play quarterback for Russell. Sean wants to play quarterback. And so he crafts the offense. So, okay, here's what's going to happen. You get the ball, you're going to throw it here. You're going to move your feet to this point, you're going to throw it there. And then, you know, the next play, here's what you're going to do. We're going to read it here. We're going to reset it. He wants somebody who's kind of, and I'm going to call it robotic because I think that's unfair, but somebody who's going to be an extension of him on the field.
On the flip side of that, like, because your opinion seems to be in line with what a lot of people in the league think. You've worked in the league. You've talked to people. You seem to see things the way people in the NFL seem to see it. You mentioned Knicks not being a first-round guy, in your opinion. Penix, Drake May, McCarthy. Does a little bit of you think that we're being duped here with how these guys are being discussed? Like, oh, they're all going to go in the first round. Like, part of me thinks, because everybody who's watching the tape and is studying these guys and what they did in college is saying, yeah, when you actually watch them play, they're not really guys who go this high, but because of need, they're going to go this high. Like, does that check out when you kind of look at this draft here? Because part of me thinks that we might be getting duped and maybe three guys go in the first round and maybe the rest of these guys end up going in the second round or later on in the draft. Like, a little bit of that Will Levis of what we saw last year kind of seeps in for me, at least.
Yeah, well, I think there's some certainly there could be that case. I don't see it here. I think there's this, you know, ego gets involved in these decisions, Femi. I can fix them. I can fix Drake May. There's a lot of talent there to like, and no one, including the GMs that don't think he's a first rounder who don't like him, they cannot dismiss the talent. Remember, EJ Manuel went in the first round. Kenny Pickett went in the first round. You know, just because Will Levis didn't go in the first round doesn't mean these other guys. And I agree. Like, there's no way. We were in the draft. There's no way we would have picked E.J. Manuel. I didn't think E.J. Manuel was a third rounder, let alone a first rounder, you know. And so there's certain guys that you just are different on. But there's when you have the intelligence and the character and the endearing quality to associate yourself like Bo Nix has, coaches feel like, well, I can get him to do that. I mean, really, Bo Nix is really Andy Dalton. And if you said that, you'd say, well, that's a second rounder. That's probably right. But people remember Andy Dalton today. But he's a better, you know, but Andy Dalton, I think, didn't he take him to like seven playoff games in Cincinnati?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he did some good things there. That's like not a shot at him. But it's the reality of what it is. And who coaches the player? Like, to me, Nix is, it could be Andy Dalton, but to me, Nix is better than Kenny Pickett. He's got more skill set than Pickett had. But both of them are going to be top 10 players at their position.
Yeah.
But if the coach has them, like if I were in Denver and I was watching them and Sean was passionate and answered every single question about Nix and was telling me how it was going to go, I think you almost have to believe it because he's committed to it. He's committed to it. And that's how he has sponsorship and scholarship. See, no one who drafted Daniel Jones, I mean, John Mara drafted Daniel Jones. There was no other. See, this is what happens to a lot of these quarterbacks. There's this, the commitment void happens. You know, there's no commitment within the building. And then when you lose that commitment and you change coaches, all of a sudden you're inheriting somebody else's problem.
And that was the case in Denver, and we saw how that played out. They said goodbye to Russell Wilson. Now Sean Payton has his chance to handpick the guy that he wants to work with. And like, there's the sweat equity, like you mentioned, the commitment. Like, he's going to try everything to make this work. And if it's Bo Nix, you're going to a pretty good spot there in the Rocky Mountains. They just got some new jerseys, by the way. They just tweeted them out. I'm a little iffy on them, but congratulations to the Denver Broncos, a new era of uniforms for them in 2024. Before we wrap things up, though, let's go through some of the most critical drafts that we have. You have my team, the Dallas Cowboys, at number one for this being the most critical draft in the league. Why are the Cowboys in such a tough spot here, and why is this draft so important for them moving forward?
Well, I think the reason is because they didn't do anything in free agency, and their depth chart's dependent on the draft, right? They don't have they have one running back on the team. You know, is Deuce Vaughn going to be the other guy? I don't know. They have no left tackle currently on the team unless they move Tyler Smith out there. They have depth everywhere. Now you're picking 24th and 56th. I mean, it's hard to improve, but I think it's a critical draft. And I'm not suggesting they trade up. I'm not. I'm suggesting that that whoever they pick, it can't be Mazie Smith where they're just not happy with them.
Yeah.
No, they got a hit with the draft.
Yeah. Has to be a day one impact player for the Dallas Cowboys. So you're saying the Rolls-Royce Freeman signing didn't do anything for you at running back for the Cowboys?
It didn't move the needle for me much. But look, I think Jerry's taking too much shit for this statement we're all in, because he was referring to, I'm going to sign Lamb, I'm going to sign Parsons, and I'm going to extend Dak. Now, do they take a quarterback? Do they take a quarterback?
Come on, don't drop that on me.
Like, to me, if I were Jerry and I knew I had to pay Dak, and I think Dak's a really good player, but he's overpriced himself. And he's like Kirk Cousins. He's been proven that, you know, when you don't pass the salt at quarterback, it's hard for the team. And so, you know, the only way you're going to get out of Dak is you're going to have to draft one, because Dak has all the leverage on you if you don't.
So you asked that question, and people have asked the question, should the Cowboys take a quarterback in this draft early? I really haven't seen anything about them doing any work. Could this be some secret kind of covert mission that the Cowboys have been on, doing work here? Because it's interesting that you asked that question 3 days before the draft here.
Well, I look, they've done work on them, right? Has Jerry gone down there with a whistle and his clipboard? No. Okay. But that doesn't mean they're not interested, right? I mean, that doesn't mean they're not interested. So, you know, look, most of these guys, I'm sure they spent time with Knicks. I'm sure they spent time with Penix, but like Caleb's not giving them an audience. And I don't think Jaden Daniels would give them an audience. And, you know, would McCarthy maybe? I don't know. But, you know, look, if you want to be stealth in your what you're doing, you've got to look. You got to be prepared for what happens if you have this grade on Penix and he makes it us at 24. You got to be prepared for that.
Yeah.
And you can't say, "Well, he's not making it to us," because then you're not. That all that is resistance. You're just basically making an excuse for some work you don't want to do.
That's a really good point. I mean, that kind of happened to Big Daddy's Green Bay Packers. All of a sudden, Aaron Rodgers is there at 24, and they said, "Hey, we like this guy. Let's draft him." And the rest is history. There's a Super Bowl out of that one. Buffalo is another team that you have with a critical draft. I think a lot of people have put them in the wide receiver camp, given the fact that they traded Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans. Yeah. Gabe Davis is now in Jacksonville. Why is this draft so critical for the Bills?
Well, they need a plug-and-play player. I think anytime you need a plug-and-play player and you're picking down where they are at 28, it's hard, right? It's like Philadelphia. Philadelphia has filled all their needs outside their building with free agency. They've gotten depth. They've got all sorts of – the only place they haven't filled is the corner position, because there was no corners out there that they could have signed. Obviously, they could have traded for Snead, but they weren't going to pay that kind of money, so they need to draft one. Whereas the Bills, you know, when they made the decision to draft Diggs, they felt like there were options in the draft. I'm not saying they were first-round options. I'm saying they felt like there are options where they can put the player in and feel like they could plug and play. That's why it's critical for you.
Yeah, and it's a deep wide receiver draft. It doesn't have to be done on Thursday. There's guys Friday, maybe even Saturday, who can be productive. The last three teams in your top five most critical drafts, Patriots, Commanders, Broncos. I'm assuming it's because they need to go ahead and get a quarterback.
They all got
to
hit on quarterback.
Yeah.
They all got to hit on the quarterback. Because here's the thing, and they all know it too. If they take a quarterback, they got to be right. Like you have to second-order think the decision. You can't, and all of us have made this mistake, if you don't second-order any draft pick, if you don't ask yourself what has to be right, this is a great Roger Martin thing that he does. He talks about what has to be true for us to be successful. And what has to be true for Denver, what has to be true for New England, what has to be true for any team, Minnesota, that picks a quarterback, is we have to hit with the quarterback. And that's to be successful. And then you got to extend it. What do we have to do with the quarterback to then be successful? See, these are the conversations that you really can't have with scouts, because scouts are grading the talent. They're not grading the scheme. You know, they're not grading the indoctrination within the framework of what they're doing. And so I think ultimately that's where it comes down to. You got to be able to, Elliott's got to hit with the first rounder, and they got to be able to be the cornerstone piece to build the rest of the team around. Because when you're a general manager with a quarterback who can play, you look a lot better than a team without one.
100%. My last thing for this pod is, have you already made your reservations for Barry's Steakhouse since you're coming out here to Las Vegas? Has that been done, or are you?
I haven't yet. No, I doubt if I'll go. I mean, how am I going to have time to go?
Doubt if
you'll
go.
Seriously, I get in there tomorrow. I got to go see my grandkids. I got to go spend Wednesday with them. I got you Thursday, unless Barry's going to deliver to the room, which I'm sure you could probably orchestrate that. And then Friday, we got the draft. And Thursday night, how about the NBA? How brilliant is the NBA? I mean, they're going to put an NBA game on against the NFL draft. Like, yeah. At least you and I will be able – I can show you how Embiid just walks up the court. By the way, do you know Embiid has never won a series past the first round? But, you know, he's the franchise, and, you know, it's all you could do.
Never been to the conference
never
finals.
Never passed the first round.
I think he's the only MVP that's never made the conference finals in league history.
So. He's never advanced past the second round.
Yeah.
Forget the conference final. Yeah. He's never gotten past the second round. And everybody said, well, it's a shame he's hurt. How about Kendrick Perkins saying, well, you know, they should rest him. And rest him? For what? What are you going to save him for? Next year so he can get hurt next year? Like, does anybody think at that network? Does anybody, like, understand what the fuck they're talking about? Like, oh, let's rest him. Like, Kendrick, he's going to get hurt again. It's proven. Are you not aware of this? Like, he's going to get hurt. He's always hurt. He had 8 rebounds the other night. 8.
Yeah.
8 rebounds. Paul Reed had 5 in 11 minutes. He had 8. It's a joke. But they run a great organization. God bless you, Commander fans. Go.
We're going to get to watch it Thursday night with the draft. Well, we got 4 screens in the studio. I'm sure one will be on Sixers and the Knicks in game 3. Do you and Big Daddy have a friendly wager with this series? Because you mentioned Big Daddy's a Knicks fan.
No,
you're a Sixer.
Wager? No, I don't. I just listen to him. In fact, when I saw Daniel at the Chico in place, he's like, oh, I want to meet Big Daddy. You know, after I got a colonoscopy, the doctor who gave me the colonoscopy said, hey, you know, I listen to your pod every week. I got to meet Big Daddy. Like, we've created a cult.
This guy's famous.
We've created a legendary cult figure. He's famous. I mean, yeah, we'll see.
Well, maybe after the weekend, we'll get his thoughts on whatever the Green Bay Packers do in the NFL draft. But once again,
he's predicting their draft. Goot, I just want you to know, if you're listening to the pod, he's predicting you're going to pick a corner again. That's because that's all he knows. Of course, he also thinks you don't spend any money on coaches or staff. So he's so well informed. You know, we'll know. He's got to get, you know, he's got to get stuff in order over there.
Yeah, meanwhile, the Packers are like 15-1 to win the Super Bowl. If you listen to Big Daddy, yeah. I think they're 150-1, but they're 15-1 to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, with no players.
I mean, just amazing stuff. But quick programming note, as always, for if you didn't catch the last podcast, we want to let you guys know we'll be back on Wednesday. Wednesday will be our NFL draft preview. We want to give it a little bit more of a run out to Thursday. Thursday's a little bit too close to Thursday night's draft. We'll have a special draft night show Thursday night on the DraftKings Network and on VSiN simulcast there. And then also Friday morning, we'll recap everything with a Friday pod here on the GM Shuffle, recapping all 32 picks from the first round. Where did the trades happen? Who did the Commanders take at pick 2? We'll try to figure that out between now and then. But those are the programming notes for you guys this week. Michael, safe travels out here to Las Vegas. I'm sure you're excited to get out here. We're excited to have you in person in studio starting on Wednesday. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos as always. Subscribe, rate, and review. Michael, safe travels. We'll see you later on Wednesday.
I'll see you tomorrow.